Blog Talk Radio.
Flash it. New thing. This is the song. Got two lyrics. Very simple and plain. We can all sing together. No ads to feel left out. Join in. This is a song that people need to be singing right about now. When they're telling you that you can't, you shouldn't, you won't. Sell them this.
Miss Paula Deen is gorgeous.
being 66 years old with her darling blue eyes and that Southern Belle talk. Now, personally, I'm not even mad at Paula Deen. I use the word nigga all the time. I will say my part and then I will play a sound bite that I found. And let me tell you the reason why I'm not offended by what Paula Deen says. First of all, Paula Deen is a middle class white, rich white woman who lives in Georgia. First of all, in her surroundings before she even got on the show, you knew Paula Deen had that in her anyway. So why are people so offended because she's so matter of fact? The way that I look at Paula Deen is this. She is real to the core. She said, do you use the N-word? She said, yes, of course. That's what I'm talking about, America. If you, listen, you can fake it till you make it, but Paula Deen kept it real. I'm not mad at Paula Deen because, you know, first of all, her using the N-word doesn't offend me because I've been called the N-word by white people all the time. So I'm fine with that, okay? Secondly, now, she took it a little far when she was talking about having this this plantation wedding. Now, I must admit, and I'm chuckling because I think it's pretty cute. And I know y'all are going to think I'm crazy. But when she said it was like a fantasy for her, ladies and gentlemen. It's like, I would just love to go back in that period of time when blacks were just serving me. Now, listen, another thing is this. If you look at her past episodes, she's got a black woman friend who goes into her kitchen and helps her cook these foods. So for me, it just bubbles up in me, and I just start laughing about it. You know, I'm still a Paula Deen fan. I don't care. I'm a mocha. I'm a dark mocha color. So Paula Deen saying that, I mean, yeah, black people gonna get emotional about it, and people gonna be. But one thing Paula Deen did, and we as black people always say, keep it real. Paula Deen kept it 100. She said, yeah, my brother Bubba probably said some inappropriate things, but we all do. We're all human. That's what I'm talking about. She didn't sugarcoat it, and this was all in the deposition. And I'm going to play a soundbite in a minute. But I just wanted to get that off my chest because I was just giggling at the fact people are so up in uproar about this. Like, come on, man. There's more stuff to be more offended about than Paula Deen saying the N-word. Like, come on. The nigger word has been out there all the time, and you know, white people and black people go against this all the time. Well, it's not okay for blacks to say this, and it's not okay for whites to say. Listen, whites say it all the time that are not away from black people. Now, if you're white and you don't say it, kudos to you. But I know a lot of white people, when they with black people or they not with black people, nigga come out their mouth. You can say nigga, negroid, whatever. It's coming out your mouth. And so it is a word that is used. And if you let that word define who you are and stop you, and I had to learn this about a year ago. My wife told me, she said, this is the only time I say it is a word. And so my wife told me, she's like, you know that man wanted you to get upset. And I said, you know what, honey? That's true. As a Christian man, James told me, be quick to listen, slow to speak, slow to anger. So, listen, let me tell you one quick story before I play soundbite. I was in Oregon living 4 years, and I was in my PTSD. I had it really bad. I was just now getting on my medication, and I was having a real bad day. It took us 45 minutes, because where we live 45 minutes from the main town. And so we drove in 45 minutes. We went to Albertsons, and I had to go to the bathroom extremely bad. So I'm standing there, and there was a gentleman who came out the bathroom, and then there was a white man older white man. He just darted for the bathroom, right? So he comes out the bathroom, and he says, Ladies and gentlemen, I tell you, I had PTSD. I was about to drop kick this man in the chest. But the only thing that kept me from doing that is the word of the day when I was praying. I had to work on patience. That was the Bible, the morning study of the morning was patience. And if it wasn't for Jesus, I would have probably been arrested for kicking this old white man in the chest. Now, as you know, Oregon don't have a lot of black people in there in the first place. So I would have went straight to jail. Okay, so I mean, I'm just having so much fun right now. I'm not going to even do the opening thing because it's just open mic night. We're going to play it. So this video clip, I found it on YouTube. Thought it was really great. YouTube. And it comes from the Young Turks website. So I'm going to play the sound.
Paula Deen was quoted in a deposition indicating that she used the N-word and other racial jokes that made fun of Jews and also black people. So the reason why we have a deposition in the first place is because she's being sued by a former employee, someone by the name of Lisa Jackson. She's a former Paula Deen Enterprises employee. And she's suing because she says that she was in an uncomfortable work environment because of some of the language that Paula and her brother used while at work.
Damn.
Okay. So according to the deposition, when asked if she wanted black men to play the roles of slaves at a wedding, she explained that she got the idea from a restaurant her and her husband dined at, saying the whole entire wait staff was middle-aged black men, and they had on beautiful white jackets with a bow tie. And then she continued, I mean, it was really impressive. The restaurant represented a certain era in America after the Civil War, during the Civil War, before the Civil War. It was not only black men, it was black women. I would say they were slaves.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. That's what they were before the Civil War, except I didn't look at that like, oh, yeah, now, wouldn't that be fun to go back to that era? Like, what was she thinking?
I don't know. And in this deposition, you know, the lawyer keeps asking her questions about the kind of language she used in the past. And in some ways, she seems like she's not really apologetic at all. She's unapologetic because of the fact that she grew up in the South. And she's like, look, in that time and in that context, it was acceptable. But it seems like she still uses that type of language today. At least that was the impression I got. You guys can read the full transcript. It's online. But, you know, she uses it in a joking way. And so since she uses it in jokes, it's acceptable.
Like, what, the N-word?
Yes. So let me give you some examples. So the lawyer asks her, have you ever used the N-word yourself? She says, yes, of course. The lawyer asks, okay.
That's ballsy. Of course?
Yes.
Okay, all right.
Lawyer asks, okay, in what context? And Deen says, well, it was probably when a black man burst into the bank that I was working at and put a gun to my head. The lawyer asks,
that's terrible. That's worse.
Yes, I know. And remember, this is the exact transcript, okay? The lawyer asks, okay, and what did you say? Well, I don't remember, but the gun was dancing all around my temple. I didn't feel real favorable toward him.
So that means she's totally admitting that she used it in a massively negative context. There's nothing joking about that. She's like, oh, gun in my head. Hey, what's up, my... I don't think that's the way she used it, right?
Let's go to the next graphic.
Now, mind you, look, it's a high-stress situation, et cetera. You got a gun to your head, like maybe you do crazy stuff. But that's a different excuse, and not a great one at that either. I mean, I wouldn't judge her at the time, but apparently that's what she... Like, if a guy comes up and puts a gun in my hand, I don't think, oh, effing N-word, right?
Right.
I think, like, maybe effing asshole, don't shoot me, right? But I don't really care what race he is.
Right, and, you know, in terms of that conversation, or that part of the conversation, the lawyer continued to ask, well, then, when did you use it? Because she was asked, well, did you use it? Or did you use the N-word to him as he pointed the gun in your head at your face? And she said, absolutely not. Well, then when did you use it? And Deen says, probably in telling my husband.
That's a million times worse. No, guilty, no question. Oh, I thought she was going to say, I immediately regret this decision. But it turns out she doesn't even really regret the decision to use the N-word.
She's like, yeah, I use the N-word, doesn't everybody?
I mean, look, exactly. N-word guy breaks into the bank with a gun in my head. What am I going to tell my husband? A white guy did it? That's crazy. She's old school, southern, I guess fairly racist.
She's unapologetic, which makes it even worse. So then she was asked about her brother's activity, and here's what she had to say. The lawyer first asked her, are you aware of Mr. Ayers admitting that he engaged in racially and sexually inappropriate behavior in the workplace? She replies, I guess.
That's it. Totally.
Okay, well, have you done anything about what you heard him admit to doing? And she said the following. My brother and I have had conversations. My brother is not a bad person. Do humans behave inappropriately? At times, yes. I don't know one person who has not. My brother is a good man. Have we told jokes? Have we said things that we should not have said that? Yes, we all have. We all have done that, every one of us.
So what is it that her brother was supposed to have said?
So just, racially charged jokes. I don't know what the specifics are in terms of the sexual harassment, so I don't even want to speculate or get into that.
Mm-hmm.
But the defendant in this case, I'm sorry, the person who's bringing on this lawsuit, Lisa Jackson, claims that there was some sort of sexual harassment.
Right.
Yeah.
Man, she's pretty brazen. She's like, yeah, I mean, come on. Who are you going to make sexist, racist jokes? You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying? Wouldn't it be great if we had a party, like, and then we had the, like, displays like we used to during Civil War, pre-Civil War time?
Mm-hmm.
What? Look, I mean, even if you were going to talk about a theme party, pre-Civil War, I'm trying to think of how in the world you could pull it off. At least multiracial, you know, the waiters or whatever are multiracial. You mix it up, whatever. I don't know, right? I never thought of a slave party before. Anyway, but she doesn't say that. In the beginning, she was like, no, I like seeing the black guys in their, you know, little outfits with the bow ties serving the white people. That was fun. We should do that in a party.
So I want to give you guys that exchange verbatim. So let's go to that. The lawyer asks, do you recall using the words really southern plantation wedding? Dean says, yes. I did say I would love for Bubba to experience a very southern style wedding, and we did that. Okay, you would love for him to experience a southern style plantation wedding? And she says, yes. Now fast forward to the rest of the conversation. The lawyer asks, okay, what era in America are you referring to? Well, I don't know, after the Civil War, during the Civil War, before the Civil War. Lawyer says, right, back in the era where there were middle-aged black men waiting on white people. And Dean says, well, it was not only black men, it was black women.
Oh, well, she got merciful. That's insanity. Go on. The most obvious guilty of all time. Look, what you do with that is a different question, right? And how will that affect the case? What should be the outcome of the case? What is the damages? That I'm not speaking to. Whether Paula Deen apparently is, I was going to say a closet racist, but it's not really that much in the closet. Apparently she pretty much admits it.
Yeah.
Seems very clear.
So it continues. Lawyer says, sure, and before the Civil War, those men and women that were waiting on white people were slaves, right? And she says, yes, I would say they were slaves.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty open and shut case. Good luck with that, okay?
So this is
Paula Deen turns out to be a really bad person. I mean, that was the whole thing about how she hid her condition while she's buttering everybody else up.
Yeah, she was diagnosed with type 2 diabetes, and while she knew about her condition, she was encouraging people to eat fatty foods and, you know, basically foods that worsen that condition or lead to that condition. Let me just say that the Food Network says that they are monitoring the situation, so they will make decisions in terms of her employment based on any other news that comes out.
I'm amused by the monitoring. If she has any more slave parties where she's like, I mean, black slaves, there were men and women. What do you mean? We might take some action. Look, one thing that's important about this, forget Paula Deen, okay, in the sense that, like, she's just one person, et cetera. But the overall thing that's important in this story is there's a lot of people like Paula Deen who grew up in a different era.
Definitely.
That are still with us, right? And they think, like, what do you mean? Guy came to rob the bank. Of course, he was a... You know what I'm saying, right? Like, she says that to her husband without blinking. That's not an issue for her. And then what's amazing is she admits that in a deposition with lawyers when she's being sued over this issue, like, I don't get it. He was an N-word. Like, where's the question, right? So I can't even get myself to say it, and she's dropping it left and right in a deposition.
And also,
and there's a lot of people like that. They think, like, well, I don't understand what you're saying. Those were the good old days.
And
wouldn't it be great?
And also that, coupled with the fact that she is fabulously wealthy. I mean, I'm sure she feels that she's above it all. Like, she can say things like that and get away with it because she's a woman of privilege. Like, and I don't think, I think it's more a subconscious thing. I don't think that she actually, like, thinks about that and, like, you know, will ever say that. But when you're that wealthy, you do get that sense that you can say certain things or do certain things and get away with it.
And also seeing your context in your bubble, right? In her bubble, apparently a lot of people think that way. So she's, like, doesn't even quite register to her how weird and offensive and wrong it sounds to the rest of us.
Right.
Okay, so I'm telling you, I love that clip. I love it. I love Paula Deen. I'm gonna write Paula Deen personally myself. I'm gonna send her, shoot her email, and tell her I love her. Regardless, oh Lord, I got a phone call. Oh no, now I can't be good taking calls right now. I am on air. And so, listen, love Paula Deen. She said the N-word. She said nigger. I say nigger all the time. Listen, the word to me does not have an effect. Now, this is the thing that I do not like. I do not like the fact that they fired her over saying this. Now, I understand that I am one person out of maybe how many black people are there? Maybe about 11.5. You know, they call us half of people anyway, a fourth of a person anyway. Anyway, I shouldn't joke about that stuff. But, yeah, look, out of 11.56 million black people out there, and it's my opinion. Now, like I said, I'm not mad at Paula Deen at all. She was very honest in her answers, and that's all you ask a person to be. You can't listen. My uncles are older than Paula Deen, and they still have that aerotype of respect for white people. You know, they kind of, you know, look towards the ground, and they say, yes, sir, yes, ma'am. And, you know, they kind of got that. And so older black people, some are who aren't so radical but more submissive in some ways, They still do that. And so Paula Deen's 66 years old. She's, like I said earlier, she lives in Savannah, Georgia. She probably lives in Savannah. I think she lives in Savannah. Savannah, Georgia. In her, like that guy said, in her bubble, it's normal. And she kept it real. I can't be mad at that. I can't. I love Paula Deen. Now, if she called me a nigga to my face, I probably would have to say, please don't call me a nigga. But it's different, I'm telling you. Me growing up being called a nigger all the time, you know, by my white friends, some of them anyway, it's very stunning when you're a child. Now that I'm 35 years old and I got Jesus in my heart, I got to do nothing but love him. And I'm sure... okay, first of all, let me make this disclaimer. I am not promoting that white people start saying the nigger word. If you want to say it, fine. Because some of you probably say it anyway. It doesn't bother me. It may bother some other black people, but whatever. Now, this next clip I'm going to play, it's even funnier because it's coming from The View. Now, The View, I only know three of the four people that were on the panel. That was a young Hispanic lady on there. She was a guest anchor, and I don't know who she was. But Whoopi Goldberg, Sherry, I forgot her last name, and Barbara Walters was on there. And then, like I said, that younger Hispanic girl on there. And now I was brought to my attention by my wife that back in the 80s, during some award, she was dating Ted Danson, who played in Cheers, and they were dating, and so she thought it would be funny if he came on stage in blackface. So check this out. I'm gonna play the clip. So I just want to bring that to your attention, because on one hand you got Whoopi Goldberg, who's at that point in the 80s and the early 90s, she was like a superstar, and she's hanging out with one of the most popular guys on TV at the time, or dating him, Ted Danson, the guy who played in Cheers, and he comes on stage in blackface. Like, is that a shocker? I mean, it's let me just play it. But they don't talk about that, just to let you know, but I just find it, you know, it tickles me. I'm sorry. I'm just that kind of person. I'm sorry. I'm just that way. Okay, here we go.
on the manager, and reportedly, Poole said in court that she has regularly used the N-word and that she admitted to her desire to throw a pre-Civil War era plantation wedding where white tuxedoed black servants would sing and tap dance to amuse guests, but didn't because she knew she'd get flack for it. What? I think one of her employees was suing her and her brother Bubba for this, and I think, you know, she said when they questioned her that there was somebody when she used to work at a bank, a black man who put a gun to her head, and she didn't call him the N-word, but when she went home, she used the N-word to her husband, and, you know, also she wanted to do this wedding where she liked the way that the black men were dressed in their outfits because it reminded her of the pre-Civil War, but that's when we were slaves, you know, like, and we don't like anything, we don't like you recreate anything before we were free, you know. What effect this has in her career, which is why in part we're talking about it, because we remember Mel Gibson when he used an anti-Semitic remark and he was stopped at one point. And it did him a great deal of harm and may still continue to affect his career. And do you remember Michael Richards, who was Kramer on Seinfeld, you know, and he used the N-word at a black audience members, he said, who taunted him. And I don't know whether it was just that he wasn't that good an actor, maybe he was, but his career has not recovered. So the big question here may be, how much does this affect her career? Does it at all? What do you think?
Well, also about that, I want to add something else. So this year, the Congressional Spouses, we have a luncheon every year for the First Lady. This year, Paula Deen was a special guest. She planned the menu. I wonder if those kinds of invites won't come as easily to her after something like this. But I do want to say something as a minority woman.
Yes.
If we are going to agree as a culture that the N-word is bad, then as minorities, as African-Americans and rap singers and Hollywood directors, then we all need to take the lead on that. We can't just say it's a bad word if you use it, but not if you use it.
I disagree.
Oh, use it because you're black, it's okay, but it's not okay if I use it. Or if you say something about me, let's say because I'm Jewish and somebody else does not, I don't find that any excuse. I would wish you wouldn't do it either. I mean, I think any slur is painful.
I say that anybody can say anything as long as they know there will be consequences.
Okay, that is
the thing that Michael Richards discovered.
Yeah.
There were consequences for what he did in the club. Now, rap singers, they have made a decision about how they're going to work with a word that has affected their group.
But it's selected outreach, and it goes with the B word, and it goes with... That means they can throw out not just the N word, but they can degrade women with the B word, and it's okay.
I call people witches all the time.
You do it, and Joy does it too. And she says,
"Well,
you
can't do it."
Right. I'm being funny.
Those comments, and there's a couple things. I'm not a big Whoopi Goldberg fan. I'm not, but there's a couple things that she said that was very interesting. First of all, she said that the young people these days have taken the word and made it whatever it is, and it has no power. I'm going to play both sides of the fence here. And the reason why I'm going to do that is because that's how people usually come out into debate. So, on one hand, America's saying that racism is gone. That there is no such thing as, if we're in a post-racist moment. And then on the other hand, we have people who don't want to use the N-word because it has an effect on what happened in the past. Now, on my show, we talk about slavery in depth. We talk about words and their meaning in depth. We talk about people's opinions in depth. Even on my show, I have had 3 shows, and if you go back to my archives in the earlier part of my shows when I was starting, I had people calling my show, calling me a nigger on air, calling in and said, "Yeah, you're a dirty monkey nigger, and we want to kill all the Jews." I mean, they were saying all this stuff on the air. And, I mean, listen, the other thing that Whoopi said that was important was people can say whatever they want, which is true. I mean, God gave us a mouth, all right? The First Amendment backs that mouth. But you must know if those words leave your lips, there will be consequences regardless of what it is. I've said stuff to my wife and didn't even think it was offensive. I thought it was funny. And she got mad at me. So you just gotta understand the words in your mouth. See, James says the best. He says, how can you bridle your tongue when it's the most wickedest thing that you have on your body? Let me get the exact quote. I know I muddled it up, and I apologize. You know how I get about messing up the scripture or messing up words because people will take your words out of context and they will switch it on you real quick. And so I want to make sure I'm factual. If you're going to misquote me because I'm saying the right things, and that's where I want to make sure I get it. Okay, so where is it at? That's not that many books in James. I mean, chapters in James, so it's going to be quick. Oh, boy. I know it's about bridling the tongue, but I can't get the scripture. And we will be doing James no further. I love James. James is one of my favorite books, besides Corinthians. But it's nor here nor there. Okay, so we're in James 3. We're in James 3. I'm sorry, I'm still laughing about the Whoopi Goldberg thing. We're in James 3, verse 6. And it, James 3, 6, it reads, "And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that is, it defiles the whole body and setteth on fire a course of nature, and it is set on fire of hell." Number 8, it says, "But the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison." Full of deadly poison. So, okay, I'm going to leave James up because I'm going to quote that. You know, I quoted this quote this week. I think that's 4 or 5. But anyway, so getting back to what I was talking about. We have to realize that things are, you know, things happen, okay? And you just got to be able to, you've got to be able to just know that words come with consequences. I just think that was a great thing for me. I'm taking calls tonight. If you'd like to call in, area code 347-989-1014. If you'd like to make a comment about past shows, want to ask me a question, you just want to talk. If you got some talent, anything goes tonight. Anything you want to talk about, anything you want to say, whatever. But you know how I do it because I am the way that I am. If nobody's calling in, I'm going to continue to talk. So, you know, this Paula Deen thing is really, to me, not a big story. It's not really something that bothers me as much. But it bothers a lot of people because, listen, the word nigger, first of all, was used in a sense of control. And we know that when we read the Woody Lynch letter, okay, we know that control is very, very important in that part of slavery. But listen, you know, a lot of people said, well, why won't black people move on from the slavery part? Now, it is kind of hard for, see, first thing is first. White America really has never apologized, and I'm saying white America. I'm talking about the government first of all, and majority of the people in the South. Now, I mean, some people in the North maybe, some people in the West maybe, but listen, the South has never apologized. The white Southerners have never really apologized to the blacks. That's one thing. Maybe a couple, once or twice, somebody might have said something, but I'm talking about an official, hey, listen, we're going to move on, we apologize. We brought up reparations on this show before. We're not going to get reparations. That's fine. A lot of people say, and I'm saying a lot of people, I'm saying black, white, a lot of people, say that why do you call yourself African American? You hyphenate the African and American. Well, first of all, we were not brought to this country willingly, so it's only out of respect for our heritage that most people say that. Now, I would rather consider myself to be American. I would rather say, hey, what's your ethnicity, and I would say American, because guess what? When I lived in Germany, they looked at me as an African. First of all, they say, oh, he's African. And I'm like, no, I'm American. You know, so when I leave this country, when I was stationed in Germany and I was in Iraq and I was in Kuwait, they didn't see me as, I mean, of course, I had a uniform on when I was stationed abroad. But when I had my civilian clothes on, they thought I was African. So how can I go to other countries and they see me to be African, and then I come to this country and they say, hey, well, you're African-American. Well, listen, look. It can be debated all types of ways. It can be spun all types of ways. I would rather be called American, but guess what? I have not made it there yet. And I'm 35 years old. I'm just getting over the hump of somebody calling me a nigger and not getting upset. So, hey, listen, it's going to take me a little bit of time. It is because incidents like these that continue to open wounds to black people. I mean, who doesn't love Paula Deen's cooking? I mean, she cooks everything with butter and grease. Black people love that. Have you seen her pans? Oh, we got pans. We got Paula Deen pans. We do. We got it in my house. We love Paula Deen. Oh, man, come on. But another thing that I think Sherry said was important, because of her celebrity status and who she was, she thought she could get away with it because that's the type of lifestyle she's living in. I mean, she's 66 years old, y'all. Come on. I am not condoning her behavior. But like Ruby said, too, she said, hey, you can say anything you want as long as you know its consequences. Just like when she found out, when she took Ted Danson over to this award, I don't know what kind of award it was. I should look it up. But anyway, I know she bought him there. And he was in blackface. Okay? And the second thing is when Paula Deen said she would like to have a plantation wedding. Now, listen, y'all. There's one thing black people know. You mentioned the word plantation and black. That's a whole can of worms. That's just a whole nother can of worms. Really. So, listen. I know that I talk as though I am pro-African. But listen, I'm a humanitarian, man. I'm a human first. God has no division on your soul. Your soul does not have a color. So regardless of what is said in front of our flesh, does not matter. You see, it is the division of the devil that puts that there. And we continue to drag that baggage. And I'm telling you, I am one to drag the baggage because I understand that people want to move on. But if you have never, ever, ever apologized, okay, I'm having too much fun with this. I'm going to go jump to another subject. Okay, maybe I need... Oh, my God. All right, I'm so silly. Okay, so there, I don't know how old this clip is, and I'm not going to play it. I'm just going to give you a quick synopsis of the video that I watched. It's on YouTube. It's 22 minutes and 44 seconds. Now, I was listening to Joe Madison this morning on Urban Radio, and there was a comment that was made by this bishop. He's part of the A&E, I believe A&E Church, which is the I can't think of something. I forgot what it is, and I don't want to say it and be wrong. But he's a bishop of this denomination of church, and his name is E.W. Jackson. And he says that slavery did not destroy the black family. Okay? his view, I do not jump to conclusions. When I'm looking at an issue, I don't jump to conclusions. I say, okay, let me listen or read the controversy, and then let me form my own opinion by it and see why everybody's jumping up and down about it. So I get on a few minutes ago, and I start looking up his thing. Well, he's a very educated man. He graduated from Harvard. He said he did not sip the Kool-Aid, obviously, because if he sipped the Kool-Aid, he would be president, and President Obama would not be president. And he is too black to be president, first of all. And I'm talking about skin complexion, not the fact that, anyway, I mean, so, anyway, so this bishop, he has a conservative view of politics itself, and believe in a right wing type of ideology, but his basis is on the Bible. I cannot argue with him about that. I'm totally sold when he says everything that Obama has done has undermined the Bible. I totally agree. I've said this so many times on the show. I don't like Obama's policies, but I can't say I don't like the man because I don't know the man. I don't know the man. I mean, you know, you got your business face, and then you got your, when you off duty hanging with your homeboys on the weekend. You know, if you got, listen, we all got different personalities when we go certain places. We present ourselves a certain way. That's just, listen, that's how I just feel, okay? That's all I'm saying. And then check this out. So Bishop Jackson states that Obama pushing policies down our throat is not constitutional, which he's correct. By him signing executive orders, that is not policies, which is also correct. Now, on this show, if you haven't listened to my previous things, we have read the preamble on my show. We have read every amendment on this show. We have read every bill of rights on this show. So everything that we are saying, we are the group of people who are listening to my show, we are abreast of what's going on in the government and how the government works. We even had a debate show, how debates work. Hey, listen, all the grounds are covered. If you need to go back to my archives, please listen to it. They'll give you clarification. But on that point, if you say that an executive order is not policy, it is really hard for someone to say, well, the executive order that Abraham Lincoln gave to set free slaves free, it's not policy, then, because when, and we also read the Emancipation Proclamation and how it was worded. Now, you have to understand in the I know I'm kind of sidetracking, but I want you guys to understand when he said, when Mr. Jackson says, the difference between a policy and an executive order. Now, when it comes to executive order, that is saying that, listen, regardless of what Congress says, I'm going to do what I want to do. So when President Abraham Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, it was said that I am the President of the United States, the Chief and Commander of the Army and the Naval. Okay? Very important for people to understand this. What he was saying is now I have pretty much made martial law, and I am in control of all the United States. I mean, it's kind of a slippery slope if you think about the dynamics of it, because the Southern senators and Republicans, those Southern gentlemen who were in the Senate and the House walked out. They completely walked out of the White House, the Congress chambers, and went back to their homes, to their respective states, when it came to passing the anti-slavery bill. So what they had to do, and it's also in the Emancipation Proclamation that was written by Abraham Lincoln, considered those people or those states who have left and did not want to come back at the time to be terrorists or treasonous at that point. I'm not making this stuff up. If you want to go look at the Emancipation Proclamation, I can pull it up right now and read it to you, but I'm not. So at that point, they had to hurry and elect new Southern senators and Republicans in order to make the executive order lawful. Now, whether you believe it's lawful or not, I mean, that's kind of a slippery slope too, because other states in the South did not honor that. I mean, look at Texas. Once again, that's why we have Juneteenth, because 2 years later, after Emancipation Proclamation, Texas still had slaves. And it was because they were sent by the federal, President Abraham Lincoln sent the army, the United States Army, to these places to release the slaves, is the only way it was enforced. So now let's get back to modern day times. President Obama is signing executive orders that are not, well, technically they're legal, but they're not policies because the Senate and the House did not okay them. So when we start talking about the things that he's passed, I mean, Obama's a real tyrant. I mean, that's to be honest. I'm black, he black. It has nothing to do with black or white. It has to do with the people of America. I am a defender of the American Republic, United States Republic, and I am a defender of the democracy that we live in, that the forefathers have written in the Bill of Rights and the Constitution. I am a defender of that, and I've always been a defender of that. Even though people try to murky up the waters, ladies and gentlemen, we need to say, I mean, it is time, and this is what Bishop Jackson was saying, it is time, he declared that Christians, black or white, Jew, Hispanic, it doesn't matter, we need to stand up for Christ. And I applaud him for that. And he's saying that Obama is undermining the Bible, which he is totally doing. He has enforced Obamacare, which would allow people to give contraception for free. Also, would give abortion clinics the right to have abortions and stuff like that. Now, when it comes to those type of issues, I am about life, pro-life. I want the child to be born. And I've had this debate millions of times when I was younger. I still believe that regardless, as long, I mean, let's really look at this. And I'm taking this from the Bible. Oh, my God. Who was it? It was. I think it was Ham. Ham's son died because he spilled his semen and did not put it in his wife. God killed him. I think... I'm sorry. I'm not gonna look it up right now because I'm concentrating here. But I believe it to be Ham. But Ham's son. He had two sons, and both of them died. And one, the one that died was he had a wife, and he did not put his semen in her, and he spilt it on the ground, and he died at that moment. Now, when God, I mean, I know this is Old Testament, but God has made us to procreate. And if God says that man and woman should be together, procreate, and then so on and so forth, and killed this person because he spilled his seed and waste the lineage of the Hebrews, then let's flip it on today when we say, is it a sin for a man and a woman to have conceived a child and then a woman have abortion? To me, that would be the same concept. I mean, it's kind of murky. Okay, yeah, I'm trying to make it connect. But listen, once the child is born and God has given it life to live, it's life. Period. And that's how I feel. I'm very hard on most issues. I'm very hard on it. To me, if a woman gets raped, if it's incest, that child, regardless, deserves a chance at life, regardless. It does not have to stay with the parents, but I still believe that the child can contribute something to society because everybody, we don't even know what this person could do to make the society better because they no longer exist. When it comes to contraception, I'm telling you, when it comes to contraception, me and my wife are on total different poles. My wife believes that if our children, and we've got all girls, young girls, if they came to us and say, hey, we should have contraception, mom put me on the pill or something, a shot, that she would like to do that. I, on the other hand, say no. She said, I'd like for our girls to be truthful for us and be able to talk to us. Well, yeah, I would like that too. But then it comes into responsibility. If we're, and just this is my opinion, and I'm not saying that I'm right. I'm just simply stating how I feel and how, what my brain says. I feel that if we are teaching our young girls to wait towards marriage, and I did not wait. When I was younger, no, I didn't wait. I had sex when I wasn't supposed to, I've sinned. I've prayed to God, and it's gone away, okay? So I would want to teach my girls the right way of doing things, and that is to get married and then find the man that truly loves you, because we know how men operate. Young boys operate. They operate in a different – in this generation especially, it's one of those, you know, you're 2 years old, you got a girlfriend. It gets, I mean, that's just ridiculous. Kids do not know what love is. And if you watch that Teen Mom thing on MTV, I never watch it, but they have such hard issues because they feel like they're in love. And they're going to have to spend the rest of their life together, maybe, if they get married, and a child. I don't know. But I'd rather my children to say, listen, sex is not important to me. What's important to me is being a productive citizen, loving my family, and be able to be a productive citizen and be successful at what success they want to be. That's how I see it. Wait, I'm not saying even if we gave them contraceptive that they would not do it. I personally would want that for my children. Now, if they listen to me or not, that's just what teenagers do. And my wife's point would be, I would rather be safe than sorry. You know, and so, listen, it's one of those things you got to work out in a marriage, and we have to come to it when that time comes. And I just pray to God. You know, I've already lifted up my children and gave them to God. There is nothing really I can do about that. So I just continue to pray for my children, just like Job has prayed for his children. I think we need to do intercessory prayer for not only our children, but the children that is growing up in these homes nowadays. I mean, whether it's a two-parent home, two lesbian homes, two men, two homosexual gay men homes, it doesn't matter. What matters is that we are putting our prayers up for these young children who are being misled and not being put in a position where they're uplifted to Jesus. And so also another thing that the bishop said was that the fact that it is a democratic hate machine that's working in the Democrats' campaign, because they are spreading lies. If you don't vote in a Democratic vote, then they're going to take Martin Luther King away from day from us. They're going to put us back in slavery. And these are the things that he's saying. Listen, I'm not Democrat nor Republican. I don't care, because they're all workers of the devil. And I'm putting them all there, and I'm just saying that in a very explicit language, because if they wanted to do something to make America better, they would be doing so. So, listen, I'm not going to sit here and sugarcoat nothing for nobody. If your hands are tied, listen, stand up and pound and pound and pound. You got time to speak in the House or the Senate. Speak. Speak up on it. When the senator from North Dakota was talking about the farmers' bill that Monsanto's was passed, he was saying that 2 months before the bill was even the partial of the federal budget was passed. He was beating down the door. Nobody paid him no attention. Okay, but my point is this: is regardless if blacks vote Democrat or Republican, we as black people, we have to stop. We just have to stop depending on the federal government. I've said this before. Blacks are tied at the hip, and a lot of people will disagree with me, but if you go back and you read the Constitution, the amendments that speak about abolishment of slavery, about voting, about women's rights, women and blacks are tied at the hip with those amendments. And that's why we are so connected to the government. Because, and it's kind of weird when you think about it, because Caucasian people don't understand it, maybe to a point, because they have never been dependent on the government. As far as, for example, whites were never, even if they were indentured servants, right, even if they were overseers and slaves to the plantation masters, they were never black. Whether they were Irish, yeah, they were treated bad. The German, the Polish, they were all treated bad. I'm not saying that they were. They weren't indentured. But you have to understand, they were slaves, but they were overseers to the slaves. The slaves could not travel free about. If a black man had won his freedom from slavery for some reason why, and he had his slave papers, and he was walking through the South trying to get to the North, any white man could take that black person and make them their slave and dishonor the contract. Why? Because blacks, Africans, were considered property. And so regardless of what anyone may say, when you talk about your property, now you say, I don't want you to step on my land because this is my property. Why are you saying that? Because you have ownership and you have worked for it and bought it with your own two hands. Now, when you think about property, the blacks were considered to be sold or traded or inherited by the slave masters as according to. So when you look at, if you go back and you go to the courthouse and you go, and what I will be doing pretty soon and going to look for my heritage is, if let's say Mr. Joe Willinson had 15 slaves. Well, on the book it would say house 15 sheep, 15 cattle, a bushel of wheat, 15 slaves, and 3 children. And so they itemized slaves just as they would itemize the property. And so now the federal government had to come in and to snip the idea that blacks or Africans were not property, but considered to be human, and they deserve the same rights as whites, as others are considered to be white, based on the Constitution. So in the black community, we are black community, and women's rights are connected at the hip to these amendments, which is part of the government operations. Now, I'm not saying that black people must continue to say, well, the government must do this or the government. I'm not saying that. I am saying that we have to break free of that connection. But, and this is the but, ladies and gentlemen, that it has always been propaganda to keep black, and I know y'all are going to disagree with me on this, but I have proof. Just listen to me very carefully. COINTELPRO was one of those things to bring in the separation. Now, I mean, if you think about the Reconstruction era after the Civil War itself was just, I mean, it was just a bad thing. Sharecropping? Come on, man. I mean, really, let's think about that. So sharecropping in itself, you got COINTELPRO, you have separate but equal, and segregation. Listen, I love white people. I do. I love white people. I love all people. But you got to just give me a little second to explain me to explain this. Segregation was the worst thing to ever happen to black people. Now, once again, that's very controversial, but a lot of people would agree with me. Before segregation, blacks were successful in their own neighborhoods. Whites were successful in their own neighborhoods, even though they could not cross over. And I know it sounds weird. I know it sounds weird, but black people flourished. That's how we got jazz. That's how we got blues. That's how we have the Renaissance, the Orange Renaissance era, those type of things that came out of Harlem and New York and just all these different the blues came out of Memphis and New Orleans and you know, just that creation that black people were so innovative in the arts that was created. And I'm not saying that white people weren't, because, you know, white people always own everything anyway. But it's not until the influence of when the whites wanted to come over to the black side and gather that information and bring it and make it main popular to the white culture to make it acceptable. And I'm glad segregation happened because we should all mingle. But it was very detrimental to the black people because what happened was is instead of their schools being funded in the South, and I'm only specifically speaking in the South, I can't speak of the North or the West or the Midwest, but specifically in the South, when the monies came down from the government to the federal budget, and then the state has their budget, the black schools continue to go close down and be ruined, and we still hear this today, and then the blacks are bused to white schools. And what happens is once the blacks are shipped to bus to white schools, then we have white flight. And so now the black people are still trying to chase the white people where the white people are, and the white people try to get away from the black people. Now, you can say what you want, but this is a very, if you have not ever looked this up, and I'm so blessed to have lived in Oregon, because when I lived in Eugene, Oregon, I went to LCC, which is Lane Community College, and I had one of the best African-American history professors there was. And he divulged some information to our class. And let me remind you that Oregon is a predominantly white state. There are black people like in Portland and stuff like that, and sprinkles of black folk, Mexicans sprinkled, but Oregon is a specifically dominant white state. Now, if you go up to Washington, different story. They got some blacks there. California, of course, you got blacks. You got your Mexicans. But Oregon, it's really, really interesting. He called it the northern state of the South. Because Oregon itself, now this is, I've got literature if you want to see it, and we've talked about this before. When Oregon was being created, the Oregon Trail and all that stuff, and Lewis and Clark. When Oregon was being made as a state, it was a state law that Africans could not go to the state. It was against the law for Africans to live in the state, and they would have to go somewhere else. But if they were brought in for work, they were able to stay, which is really, it's really confusing, I know, but it's still on the books. This is the interesting thing. So blacks, they had blacks, they had Chinese, I think they were the major two. And the way that it was, the way Eugene, Oregon was built, I can only speak from Eugene because that's what we learned on. In Eugene, Oregon, there was no such thing as a ghetto because the blacks and the Chinese could not live in city limits. So what they did was they had to either live in the river, or they had to live in the wilderness. Crazy, I know. But as the University of Oregon was being built, they had Ku Klux Klan meetings there, and out of that university spawned their chapter of the Ku Klux Klan. Now, you can believe me or not, I've got documentation, and I have names of those gentlemen who were in the Klan at that period of time. I don't have it now, but I do have those names. So what I'm saying is this. Let's jump back to what I was talking about as far as the connections to blacks and blacks being and women being connected to the hip of the government. Those type of setbacks continue to harm us. This is one of the examples. Now, back in the day, I would say in the 90s, I think George Bush Sr. back in the 90s, and then carry over to Clinton's era, they talked about welfare mamas and how welfare mamas were wearing meat coats and they were driving these fancy cars and all this stuff. Now, it has come out that it was part of the propaganda machine from the CIA, and if you don't believe me, You can go look it up because it's on the FBI website. It's the truth. So majority of that propaganda was fabricated for the news media and also in the newspapers. And so one thing that was true, though, was the fact that if you were a recipient, if you're a woman or of a recipient receiving that program, your husband or boyfriend could not live with you. So what Bishop Jackson was saying was is those programs did not affect black people because they shouldn't have been on welfare in the first place. Well, let me ask you a question, my listeners out there. Let's say you live in a town that's got 3,000, maybe 4,000 people, and there is a small, let's say PPW works in it. Say you got a PPW, PPW is a glass manufacturer, and let's say everybody in that town, men, women, work at that town, and all of a sudden something happens where PPW closes down. What happens to that community? Let me give you a real-life scenario. In the state of Oregon, Oregon is a forestry place. What they did was is they formed a lot of trees, and they made a lot of paper, and they make a lot of coal. If you go to Eugene, Oregon, you can smell the paper mill, and you can smell the coal. And actually, the company Chaco comes from Eugene, Oregon, and we pass it every time we go into town, which was very interesting because my wife pointed out to me. It's heaps and piles of charcoal. Anyway, so where we live in Blue River, there's a population of maybe 800 people. But what they used that town was a buffer because they would form these trees up there, and they would, you know, go. All these men would go up there and work and all that stuff. But there are new policies and laws that forbid them to cut down trees now because of certain things, and I'm not going to go into that because it's just, you know. But if you have a question for me, you can always email me or ask me about it. So that community, let me tell you about that community. It completely shut down. There are only a couple places where you could get jobs in that community. If you do not get Social Security, or if you did not get workers' comp or unemployment, the next step would be welfare, ladies and gentlemen. Listen, there are people that are in that town that still get food stamps, and they're all white. In that town, there was four black people. Me, two older gentlemen, and one black man who just moved in. But let me say, it's an all-white community, maybe one or two Hispanics, but they're all majority. Some of those people are on welfare. You go to Eugene, Oregon, majority of those white people are on welfare. Why? Because the paper mill was shut down because of the forestry industry, because all the trees wasn't being cut. Lots of people laid off. Lots of people, I mean, the town is booming now. It's getting bigger and better, and it's time to get, I mean, they can go get jobs. But my point is this, ladies and gentlemen. Think about the demographic places like Detroit, Michigan. Detroit, Michigan, we know Chrysler, I mean, they were hiring people. People were doing good, black and white, and all. I mean, they were making good money. They can take leave if they wanted to. And then the factory shut down on these people. What do they do, ladies and gentlemen? Let me ask you a question, because this has happened to my father. My father dropped out of school in third grade. Back in his era, you could go to a factory with no education, and you could be a supervisor, you could be a manager, you could do all things. But nowadays, you have to have a degree. Now, I'm not making excuses. My point is this: in that era, when those people were let go, and we're talking early 90s, when these people are let go, what are they supposed to do? The only thing they knew was the factory. They've been working in this factory for 20 and 30 years, and not maybe not one of them received any pension, nor Medicaid or Medicare, because of their work there. They were just given a pink slip and let go. That's not the only story. What happened to Enron? When that big scandal happened, and all these people were talking about, you know, they lost their jobs, ladies and gentlemen. These corporations, that corporation, top dog went to prison. Sorry, he didn't go to prison. He had served a couple days, and then he got scot-free. But he was living lavishly while his employees was looking for a job, looking to be hired. Listen, when you depend on your 401k plan to retire, and you've been at a job almost 20 years going on 30, and you're saying, I just got to hold on just a little bit longer before I retire, and then my 401k will kick in and I get my rest of my stuff. Listen, when you are depending on that and that corporation crumbles, your 401k is null and void. You know why? Because the IRS seizes all money. And I'm going to start on the IRS because we talk about that all the time, right? But anyway, so what I'm saying is it is those type of things that hampers not only Black America but also White America, Chinese Americans, Polish Americans, Irish Americans, Canadian Americans. Listen, it affects us all. The second thing that I want to talk about is the propaganda of the Mexicans coming to our country. Listen, ladies and gentlemen, if you think that the Mexicans are the one that are invading our country, you need to do more research. It is easier to spot a brown person crossing the border than it is a white person driving from Canada to America. You don't know how many Canadians I know that are not legal that still live here. They got a green card. Okay, well, then that makes them legal. They got a green card. They got a visa. They're working and blah, blah, blah. That is the same thing with these Mexicans who are here. Some of them, anyway. Some of them are illegal. Do you know, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to, if you don't believe me, and I trust you that you don't believe me, I want you to go do your own research. I want you to go look at the, it's some act, and I don't really remember. I had it on a past show, but I deleted the link. America has a relationship with all countries. If they are of noble or any type of monarchy or any type of rich people, if they got any type of money, they are allowed to come to our country to learn in our highest esteemed colleges, Yale, Harvard, Brown, Dartmouth, all of those things. And they are West Point. My sister graduated from West Point and 2002, I believe, 2001. My sister's a graduate of West Point. And she said, George, you would not believe how many foreign people are here from other countries. And guess what, ladies and gentlemen? They are going to school free. If you want to be outraged about Black people getting freebies, you should be outraged about that, because guess who's paying for that? You. And if you don't, I want you not to believe me. I want you to do your own research. Why do you think in 9/11, when Bin Laden's family members were here, they flew them all out? Okay? Secondly, this stuff comes out, y'all. Secondly, people were upset because Michelle Obama went to go see Saudi national in the hospital, and they didn't want to release that footage, and it was released. Who was he? He was supposed to be here going to a school in Ohio. He was his visa said he was on a school visa, supposed to be going to a school in Ohio, and he was in Boston. Now, you say, well, he thought it was on. He has never attended the school, but he was still in our country. And if you want the article, I can give it to you. I'm saying this because, ladies and gentlemen, we are being force-fed this racial thing in order to divide us as people. Listen, the devil is doing his job. It's time for God's people to do our job. And what is that job? To stand up for justice. stand up for what is right according to the word of God. And there's only one way. There is no second or no third. Listen, Jesus said, we talked about this yesterday when we were looking at Hebrews. He said, listen, the first covenant has already been complete, but I'm coming to confirm the second covenant. And he's already done that, ladies and gentlemen. And if you do not know that President Obama is a puppet of the people that are around him, and you think Obama's really running things, you need to, listen, I'm going to give you a link. I want you to, I'm going to pull it up for you. It's called They Rule. I think that's what it's called. Let me, it's called, I'm going to put it up in the, because if you was to see this, you would be like, hey, these people are this is crazy. And basically why it's called they rule is because it's a 6 degrees of separation. And if you don't know what 6 degrees of separation is, it's say me and you are friends, and you know a friend that knows a friend who knows me. 6 degrees of separation. I'm kind of, you know, mucking it up, but... Okay, so it's called theyrule.net. Theyrule.net. I put it in a group. And you can go in and you can go and just look at people who are in President Obama's cabinet. You can go in and you can go and look up different people and that works for Halliburton or who works wherever. And you will see that everybody that is in the government or in a corporation is connected. These people are not, Obama's not working by himself. Obama's just a puppet, just like President Bush was, just like Clinton was, just like George Bush Sr. was, just like we all know that Carter was a puppet. We know Nixon was a puppet, but Nixon, see, when Nixon did, he was a coward in my eyes. I didn't grow up in that era, but listen, so when Henry Kissinger said, listen, this is what we're going to do, because he was in the back pocket of the Rockefellers, President Nixon couldn't say nothing because it was already a plan, it was already designed. And I know I'm kind of far off, but I'm still bringing in the idea of what the separation is between black folks and women separating from the government. So We know what Henry Kissinger has done, and he continues to do with the Bilderberg Group, which I will be playing an excerpt of that. The Bilderberg Group met 2 weekends ago in England, and Alex Jones, if you don't know who he is, and David Icke, two guys that are well endowed into the conspiracy. What people would call conspiracy theory, but it's not a conspiracy theory if it's true. You see what I'm saying? Let me ask you a question for those who are older than me. Why did President Reagan almost get assassinated? Why did they want to get rid of President Reagan? I just want you to go do your own research. Because President Reagan was a good old boy. He was a movie star. He was a governor. And he was president of the United States twice. But why did they try to get rid of him? Why did they kill Robert Kennedy? Why did they kill JFK? Why are these assassinations happening to presidents and we still don't have answers? You got all this magical bullet. You got my favorite candidate. What is it called? It's basically this guy was hypnotized psychologically, and he killed him, and I forgot what it's called, but it's a movie, and they also wrote a book about it. But listen, I'm not going to get on that. So what I'm saying is this, listen, ladies and gentlemen, is we take the Ten Commandments, and we stand firm on that. We stand firm on it, okay? And when somebody who is running for presidency gives us this BS, we know it's lying. I've said this many times on my show. And when I heard it from David Icke, it was just spot on. I said, well, thank you, Jesus, for that revelation. Because let me tell you the deception, ladies and gentlemen. Why, this is a question for you. I want you to go do your research. Why is it that every presidential debate has to do with the middle class? It didn't matter if it was from Nixon to Clinton to President Obama and Mitt Romney, right? Why are they so harping on middle class? Well, David, and I said this before. I said if the middle class goes away, then the veil will be undoubtedly shown how much the 1% of the wealthy controls everything around. Because then you have your rich people. I'm not talking about people who are millionaires right now. I'm not talking about Michael Jordan, Oprah Winfrey, all the people who got money. No, y'all. They don't have no money. Okay? Let me say this again. They have money, but they have no power. How is it that you can have all the money in the world that we think is a lot of money, and you still blind chains and gold teeth, buying basketball teams? Wouldn't you rather do something positive? I mean, I'm not saying busting people's, you know, butts about charity, because they do charity, but you also have to know the tax write-off too, so they get their money back regardless, all right? So anyway, but he said, if the middle class goes away, you'll see the veil being ripped open between the really, really, really wealthy people and the poor people. Then David Icke said, have you ever seen the movie Hunger Games? And Alex said, yes. He said, that is what is going to happen to us if we don't wake up. Ladies and gentlemen, if you have not seen the Hunger Games, you need to see it, because I've said this on my show before. The poorness of what we are compared to the people who live lavishly somewhere else. Now, listen, it goes back to what I said about black people of African descent and women are connected to the government. You have people who are living below poverty level right now. Each year, the cost of living is raised from year to year. Do you actually think if jobs are being lost, there is no commerce coming to those communities, and the communities are decrepit, that they will climb up so far out of that hole that they will be able to meet the standards of above poverty? If you believe that based upon your old way of thinking, then you're wrongly mistaken, ladies and gentlemen. Because for those people who own their own businesses, who are entrepreneurs, who businesses closed down and now are living from paycheck to paycheck because their credit cards are maxed out, they don't know how to handle it, and they're having to swallow their pride and accept public assistance and things of that nature, ladies and gentlemen, it's only going to get worse. So if the middle class, what we call, considered to be the middle class, comes out, it's only going to get worse. I want people to know that the beginning of the end is coming. Daniel, Isaiah, and John has already written the scripture for us to know. But your point is, George, what do you do? Like I said, stand firm on the Bible. Be strong on the Lord. You make conscious decisions based in your community. And I tell you what, the conscience of the community is fragile and it's broken. You see, you have ways of manipulating people to do certain things that they may feel uncomfortable with. Well, that's great, because you need to feel uncomfortable. It's not comfortable when there's millions of people who need food banks to eat every night. The devil is here, y'all, and he's doing what he's going to do. It is time for us as Christians to stand up. And like I said, the bishop was not wrong in most of the things that he said, because I agree with some of the stuff that he says. Doesn't make me conservative. Doesn't make me, listen, it makes me stand on what the Bible says is correct. And if you call that conservative, then whatever. But listen, the forefathers knew that religion was the backbone of it all. And if you don't have that idea of what the backbone was in being religion, you need to go, I'm telling y'all, ladies and gentlemen, you need to go do your research on the founding fathers. You need to know how many of those people that signed the American, United States of America Constitution, the Bill of Rights, were Masons. I want you to go look that up. And why is that important? It's very important. Because as I said, that they knew how strong religion would play in the founding of our country. One thing I will ask you, the Masons, if you're a Mason and you're listening to this, okay, if you are a Shriner and you're listening to this, listen, you guys claim to be a organization or a society or whatever you call you guys yourself, a religious organization. I know nothing that God has taught me in the Bible that would ever hint anything would be secret, especially when it comes to religion. And then, not only, because we studied this last night, he said that the laws will govern those who want to be governed. But when I come, I want them to know in their minds that they're mine, and know that the people are mine. Hebrews. So if you're so secret, what's up with the secrecy? If you're just doing it because y'all want to be in a brotherly hood and stuff like that, that's fine. Well, do what you got to do. But it don't have to be in secret. Why do you have rituals? And, you know, listen, there's nothing in my Bible for me that says that I got to reenact a secret ritual that happened to a master mason that was killed by two other masons just to gain the knowledge that he had. I just need somebody to answer that for me. I need somebody who is a Mason or a Shriner or a MACO. Somebody, please educate me. Give me something so I can go. I think that's what I need to do. I need to find me a Mason. I need to find me a Shriner. Get them on my show so they can explain stuff to me. My name's George Beverly. Listen, I'm going to be sporadic in my shows this summer because I'm going to be doing some things. Just know that I will be posting when I'm on the night before, and the next time I hear you, next time I see you, you should be sounding off. I'm George Beverly. Have a good night. God bless, and have a good weekend.